Hey, and welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a horror movie, which is kind of nice because I haven't seen a horror movie lately, surprisingly. Jed Bryan's here and his movie's Enlisted Owner. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man.
I just want to discuss one thing that we were discussing about off-air before, that you were telling me you sent people your film, and they say they want to interview you, and they don't watch it?
Yeah, it's happened a few times. They either say that they didn't have enough time to be able to watch it and do an interview with me, or they just, I don't know, I didn't really ask. I always, every time before I do an interview, I always ask, okay, have you seen the film? Because if you haven't, then I kind of can gear myself up to whatever questions are going to, or whatever I'm going to have to do as far as the conversation goes about talking about the film. So I always try to get that off, you know, that question right off the bat to make sure I can, you know, gear myself up for what kind of interview it's going to be.
I guess my first question is, isn't that boring?
It depends. I've had some very interesting conversations with people. I mean, I've had some podcasts that, you know, it's worked out very well, surprisingly. They let me talk about the film. And sometimes, you know, I have some podcasts where it's like, you know, I feel like they ask me like every little detail. And then, you know, and whenever I have like kind of more of a vague, I can just kind of pick and choose what I say type of deal. So, I mean, it kind of goes either way. I mean,
now you got me worried.
Yeah.
Okay, before I even ask my questions, what's a minute detail they ask you? Like, how'd you do the blood dropping from the ceiling?
No, like I've had some ask me like about my distribution deal, which I signed a non-disclosure agreement for, like, you know, stuff like that, how much my actors got paid. I mean, things like that that you normally don't, you know, disclose, you know, stuff like that. So I've had some to like go like tediously into that. So
I have no interest in what your actors got paid. You have my word.
Awesome.
I'll ask you my favorite question right now.
Go for it.
Did you feed your actors, and why did you feed them?
I think they ate Casey's Pizza because the town that we shot Enlisted Owner in is my hometown of Sumner, Illinois, and about the only thing that's open past about 6 o'clock is our only gas station in town that serves pizza. So.
Hold on. You have gas station that serves pizza?
Yep, that's about it. And then I think in some of the morning shoots, I would grab donuts from the gas station. So that's pretty much kind of what our diet was.
So you're telling me this gas station in your hometown is a one-stop shop?
Yep, that's pretty much it for right now anyways. Yeah, our town is, it's 3,200 people, but we have a prison that's like a mile outside of town. So they annex that prison in to add to our population, but our population's probably about 1,000 people. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, our closest mall is about an hour and a half from us. Closest movie theater is about 30 minutes. So, but we're 2.5 from St. Louis, 2.5 from Louisville, 2.5 from Indy, 4 from Chicago. A little over 3 to Nashville. So, I mean, we're like right in the middle of everything, but there's nothing like really close. So if you want something, you got to drive for it.
Well, there is where we can start. So I guess your cast is your friends pretty much. Because, I mean, I'm looking at a picture of you. You look about the age of those people.
Yep. Tyler and Gavin, actually, in the film are two of my best friends. They actually stood up with me for my wedding. And Griffin's actually Gavin's brother in real life. And then Andrea, I've known her for years. So, yeah, it was pretty much I just wanted to get a group of friends together. And we'd done some little bitty projects. Like we did a teaser trailer for a script I have called Meth House that we put it's out on – the trailer's on YouTube right now for it. We just didn't have enough funding to make it. I just wanted to see what we could do. And then we did a GoDaddy commercial contest and got like 8th or 9th out of 539 videos. And then after that, I was like, you know what, I'd kind of like to see if we could actually make a feature-length film. So I sat down, and Tyler actually helped me write some of it, but I wrote Unlisted Owner around different mannerisms, different dialogue that each one of my friends say. Because, I mean, you know, when you're around your friends, like, a lot, you know, you know kind of, like, how they're going to react to different situations and what they're going to say. Gavin and Tyler are nothing like the characters that are in the film, which is very funny because I have some people come up to me like, I can't believe you're friends with those guys. And it's like, if they were actually like that in real life, the egos would have been so big, there's no way I could have made this movie. But I just kind of took, like, what they would say and just applied it to the characters and the situations that they were in.
But Gavin and Tyler are the two jock kind of guys that drink all the time.
Okay. Yep, the two douches is what most people call them.
Well, I was going to try to be nicer to them. I thought, let's go back, because you're discussing dialogue and stuff. I found your dialogue very, what I think a bunch of people would say.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we wanted to make it as real as possible. And that's one of the main things with a found footage film is you want to make it, you want to have that realism. Because if you don't have realism in a found footage film, you're just going to lose your audience right off the bat. And we were just kind of, I've had some people describe it as like a reality show gone bad. And that's what we were kind of aiming for, is we want to have that realism of this is a bunch of, you know, rotten kids out for a fun night. And then, you know, through a series of pranks, it just keeps getting taken to the next level.
See, I don't know. I thought Andrew was good. I thought Jed was good. Like, then you guys seem to really be upset. The two douches were really the main problem.
Yeah.
Driving drunk, being jerks to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really funny because Tyler, who plays one of the douches in the film and does all this crazy stuff, was actually a police officer at the time. And there's no way any of us would do any of this stuff. And that's kind of what we wrote the story for, is to show peer pressure. And basically you have a group of friends of me and Griffin both have girlfriends, and Gavin and Tyler, you know, trying to get all the girls they can. And, you know, it used to be me and Griffin, Gavin and Tyler were inseparable, but these two girls are kind of dragging the group down. It's causing the group to kind of split. So Gavin and Tyler are trying to do everything they can as far as pranks and causing mischief to make these girls leave us so they can have their boys back and we can, you know, the boys are back in town type thing. But through these pranks getting taken to the next level, it just, you know, causes the night to go complete chaos.
Okay, I'm going to start discussing the beginning because I wanted more of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I felt that maybe it was a financial issue for you that you couldn't do Show Me More in that, and that's why you went the other way?
Are you talking about the original family at the very beginning? It's funny that we talk about this part because the actual film originally, it started out with me, Tyler, and Gavin loading up the vehicle. And we did a focus group showing in Vincennes, Indiana, and we had 220 people come to it. We passed out surveys afterwards, and one of the number one questions was, or one of the number one suggestions were, they wanted to know more about this family of five.
Yeah.
So we went back through and decided, you know, to add a little bit of kind of an Alfred Hitchcock type twist at the beginning, to where it gets set up and you have this family of five and you're like, okay, you know, the movie's going to follow this family. And then all of a sudden, bam, they're all gone now.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, it kind of right there off the bat, bam, gets you in the horror.
Yeah. Cause so that was just added in afterwards. So that was filmed later.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, that was done after the fact, and that was one of the things is people wanted more of a horror element towards the beginning, because the film does drag a little bit in the middle with the road trip scene, but, you know, I think by adding that, it really kind of takes the film to a whole new level and just kind of putting that horror right there, right off the bat. And whenever we went and made this film, we wanted to, like, you know, show in chronological order the events that these kids took on their journey to this house, instead of just, you know, adding cheap jump scares in the middle. We wanted to kind of make it more of like a drama slash horror than just a horror per se.
So where did you find your location?
Actually, the house is in the town I live in, and ever since I was a kid, I've always been fascinated with that house. It's such a beautiful house, beautiful staircase, and it's such a huge house. And I just called up the guy who owned it, and no one was living in it at the time. And he said, yeah, you guys can, you know, shoot in there. And it worked out great. And then for the road trip scenes, those are all south of Sumner where I live. And then the house that we originally are loading stuff up is between Sumner and Lawrenceville. So it's everything was shot, and the whole film was shot primarily in the Sumner area.
So did your cast enjoy their shooting? Because, I mean, they're kind of like, I mean, or is this a summer project for them?
Oh, I mean, they had a blast with it. I mean, we had such a fun time, because it was kind of a weird, like, time in our lives, because right after that, everyone kind of started settling down. I ended up getting married. Tyler, he got married and has three kids now. I have a kid now. So, and Andrea, she has two kids of her own. So, or a kid and a kid on the way. But it's just amazing, because we go back and look at that time, and that was like right before everything changed. It was such a cool experience to be able to hang out with your friends every weekend, and you know, they had the same passion and enthusiasm that I had. And we're actually going to have a Blu-ray release coming out. I'm hoping either October, November. I'm not 100% sure yet what our distributor does as far as the release, but we're going to have like 20 minutes behind the scenes footage. So you're going to have outtakes and different things, and you kind of you'll be able to see some of the fun that we had while making it, some of the outtakes and stuff.
So where did you get your fire truck, police car, and tons of police tape? A little more than normal, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm actually a volunteer firefighter. So I actually had access to the, you know, the firefighters and stuff. And the chief of police was gracious enough to lend us a squad car. And actually, he's in the film as well. He's actually the cop that's in the car whenever the killer comes up. And then Tyler was a police officer, so we had his police vehicle there. And then we just asked the ambulance guys to come over. And then my mom was friends with the coroner, so we got a body bag. So everything just kind of worked out perfect.
So was the town behind your film?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100% they are. I mean, they've been very, very supportive. Whenever the film was originally, it finally came out on DVD last November, and it became available for pre-order back in September. And everyone had been waiting for this film. A lot of people didn't get to see it when we did the showings in Vincennes and Evansville. So as soon as it came out for pre-order, all these people just started just pre-ordering the DVD, and it launched us all the way up to 9 on Amazon's top 100 hot new horror release list, and it wasn't even out. This was just pre-orders, which is crazy because, you know, September, October is like the peak time for people to buy horror films. So, I mean, Walking Dead Season 7 was out, American Horror Story Season 6, Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2 was out, and, you know, we were going up against classic films like Pet Sematary 2, I think, was on the list, George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, and it was just so awesome to see our film on that list, and we stayed on the top 100 for like 15 weeks, and without the community support, there's no way our film would even made the top 100, let alone made it in the top 10.
Now, I have a question about you guys choosing a camping spot, your group of people.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like one to me.
It's actually some of my family's ground that we just picked out and just thought it'd be – we've actually camped out kind of close to there before, but we just thought it would just be an easy spot where we can get the vehicles in and out. So we kind of did it out of, you know, more easy to be able to drive into than having to drive way back in the woods or something like that.
I also made note – I did like your use of talking about replacing the camera battery. I did like that. I'm like, okay, this guy's got to run out of battery soon. I kept saying myself. I'm like, oh,
well,
I'll give him credit. I will give him full credit for putting that in.
Awesome. I'll tell you what, it's kind of weird because with found footage, there's some like found footage hardcore fans out there, and they dock you hardcore if you show any camera graphics or any like record button, facial recognition, battery, anything like that. They think it takes away from the film. But to me, it really helps the audience who are not hardcore fans, which is the majority, kind of understand what's going on in the story, because all of a sudden the camera goes black. You're like, what happened? But if you have that little battery icon, it kind of helps you understand what's about to happen.
Well, I think it helps immensely. I just been, I do not think Jed needs to get rid of this camera occasionally.
Yeah.
Because I think I would have knocked him out.
Yeah, and that was kind of the vibe. You know, you have the two annoying guys that are, you know, trying to get you to do things you don't want to do, try to peer pressure you into drinking excessively and breaking into crime scenes and stuff. And Jed just has this new camera, and he knows it pisses these guys off. So he's still recording just to kind of bug them, even though he's bugging his girlfriend. He's bugging everybody, but he doesn't care because he wants to make Gavin and Tyler. He's just kind of jabbing them back.
And I also thought it was weird that the police have this as evidence, and you keep cutting the scenes on the camera all the time. And I was like, there's nothing here to implicate these guys. Like,
yeah,
there's really nothing on this.
But are you talking about the evidence placards themselves?
Yes, and you keep putting it in. I'm like, okay, they got nothing, these cops.
Yeah, the reason I put the evidence placards in there was one of my biggest pet peeves, especially with found footage films, especially when there's multiple cameras, is like the newest Blair Witch Project. I mean, there's like, I think there's 5 or 6 different people filming, which at ours, the most, there's usually 2 people filming at once. But it would jump back and forth between camera to camera, and sometimes you get lost in the shuffle. So I did that to kind of tell you whose camera was who, and then also at certain times break up the suspense, or if there was a time change of the period, you would know whose camera it was.
I guess, have you ever thought of a sequel to this film?
I'm sorry?
A sequel?
Oh, I have one. I mean, I have an outline for one, but I would really like to, my next project to be a traditionally shot film, but it just depends on the funding I get from this one. I do have an outline for Unlisted Owner 2, and I mean, we do have a pretty good fan base for it for the first film, so I'm sure a sequel would be well received. But yeah, I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens next. I want to kind of show, you know, that I can actually make something traditionally shot instead of just be a found footage guy.
Fair enough. How did you do your funding for this film?
All myself. Whenever I was 20, let's see, I think I was 23 whenever I made this, or 20, yeah, I think it was 23. I was single, living at home, so I just used my own money.
Oh, wow, that's impressive, Ed, because you don't see that a lot for people. Your parents were obviously supportive of you then.
Oh, yeah, actually, my parents, whenever they were at the crime scene and the house is caution taped off and you see there's a guy holding the little kid, that's actually my dad and then my nephew, Bentley, so they were there.
Actually, I do know the scene you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, when did that? I'm just trying to think. Who would ask how much your actors get paid? So I'm just going back to that because I'm just like, that's just a strange question to me.
I can't even remember the podcast. I've done so many of them here recently. They're all kind of, a lot of them run together. But yeah, I mean, there's been some. I mean, I'm sure you could go on iTunes and search and be able to find the podcast. But yeah, it's, I guess I've been asked so many different questions. It's unreal.
So how did you find distribution for your film? Because you said you have it, and that's something you hear a lot.
Yeah, it was a challenge, really. Because at the time, we finished Unlisted Owner in 13, and everything that I had read online at that point in time was, you need to get into a film festival, you got to get accolades for your film, you have to have people who, you know, are writing rave reviews for it to be able to get an offer. So all of 13, we submitted all these different film festivals, 13 and 14, I guess, and we didn't get accepted at one. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, what are we going to do? Yeah, it was very disheartening. And, you know, especially whenever you make something and you have so many people that tell you, you know, like the things that they like about it are the same things you like about it. They're not just blowing smoke, you know. They're telling you, you know, I like this about your movie instead of like, yeah, you did a good job. You know, they're actually telling you, I love what you did with that scene. I love this. And, you know, we're not getting accepted. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And we actually, my wife and I, we did a trip out to L.A. And when we were out there, we heard about the American film market. And I actually found out I had just missed it. Or I think it was the following week, so I had no time to prep for it. And the American film market is basically a place, if you're a filmmaker and you have a film and you're wanting distribution, go to this thing. They basically take the Lowe's Hotel in Santa Monica and they pull out all the furniture, all the beds out of all these hotel rooms and they turn them into offices. I mean, Liongate's there, Lakeshore Media's there, Jerry Bruckheimer Films is there. I mean, you're talking the big dogs. I mean, all these different, I mean, there's filmmakers, production companies, you name it, they're there. So, I went ahead and started saving up more money and, booked my mini booth, which is basically a hotel room that was split in half. And I shared with another production company that had a film they were trying to get funding for. And I went out there. I showed the film twice at the American Film Market and had meetings set up with all these different production company or distribution companies. And ended up after AFM, I submitted screeners to all these different companies who were interested in the film. And then we had three solid offers come back to us, and we ended up getting an entertainment lawyer and ended up signing with Tomcat Films, Summerhill Films out of Phoenix, Arizona. And after we got all of our deliverables to them, they ended up setting the release date for November of 17. So that was kind of the process. But that part will go by a lot quicker for the next project I do, since I know how to actually get a distribution deal and how to get the film out there.
Is your next film going to be shot in your hometown?
I would like to. I mean, there's positives and negatives with shooting here. One thing is it's hard to get equipment, especially being that far away from places where you can rent it. So if we, our next project, where we make off this one, we're going to put into buying equipment, updating our editing software and all that stuff. And another thing is, you know, if you're going to, especially if you're going to do a traditionally shot film, if you want some actors, it's going to cost a little more because you'll you have to pay travel expenses and stuff like that. But with that being said, you're also able to have access to police, fire, ambulance at very, very, you know, little to no cost, and then also different locations. So, I mean, and that's where I get a lot of the inspiration for a lot of my scripts that I've written is the area I live in. And because whenever I write a script, I always think, what would scare me? And I put it into script form. So, and that's where I get a lot of my inspiration is around this area. I mean, the only thing here is oil wells and cornfields. So, I mean, you can let your imagination run wild.
Okay, well, that's all my questions. Are you ready for some fun questions?
Oh, yeah, let's go for it.
Everybody seems to like these now. So I'm trying to think what I'm going to ask you. It's such a small town. So have you seen Children of the Corn, and does it really happen in your town?
Children of the Corn has not happened in my town, but I love that movie. He wants you too, Malachi. Yeah, I love that film. It's a great classic film. And, you know, and that's one thing. It's really, you know, awesome about horror movies. Most of them do take place in a wooded area or involves a cornfield or, you know, a Midwestern style feel to it. And we're right in the heartland. So we're able to have access to all these, you know, places and, you know, different areas that we could shoot, which is amazing.
Now, since you just told me you live an hour and a half from the nearest movie theater.
Well, 30 minutes from the nearest movie theater, hour and a half from the nearest mall.
Okay, so 30 minutes in. So do you bring your own food to the theater?
No, I do not. It's actually an AMC. It's over in Vincennes, Indiana. So the worst part about that is that we're on Central Time, but 30 minutes from us is Eastern. So if I want to go to a movie, if they have a movie playing at 5 o'clock and I get off work at 4, there's no way I'm going to make that. So that's one of the worst parts. But we do have a drive-in theater that's close to us. It's about 30 to 40 minutes from us. So I actually saw the new It last year up there at the drive-in. It was pretty awesome.
So your favorite movie?
Just in general?
Whatever you want to say, it's your choice.
I would say a fan of the opera, Lon Chaney.
Oh, great film, 1932.
Yeah, I love Lon Chaney. I think he is one of the most, in our time period, a lot of people forget about him. I really think he's such an underrated actor. I mean, not just, you know, fan of the opera, I mean, and all the makeup pioneering that he did, but also there's a film called The Penalty that he did. I'm not sure if you've seen that or not.
I have not seen The Penalty.
Such a great film. He actually tied his own legs behind himself to be able to simulate that he was a gangster that had no legs, and he had to walk on his legs through hours of excruciating pain. He went against doctors' orders and stuff, and to me, he was a true actor to be able to, you know, to not even care that, you know, he's going to be in such excruciating pain. He was more concerned on how the actual film was going to look. I mean, in the movie, he climbs ladders and stuff. I just have the utmost respect for Lon Chaney and what he did for the film industry and how he completely changed it.
This may be a strange question, but I'm just thinking about why I talked to you. Do you go to a lot of garage sales? Because you probably don't have a lot of access to film other than streaming.
Not really. I mean, you have Amazon now, so you can, you know, stream whatever or order whatever and stuff. But I mean, whenever we do go to Evansville, that's the place where the mall's at. I mean, they got a Best Buy there. They got FYE. Actually, something kind of funny. There's actually a Barnes & Noble there. And October 13th, I'm actually doing a DVD in-store signing there.
So that's cool.
Yeah, this will be my third in-store signing at a Barnes & Noble. I did one up in Indianapolis at the one in Greenwood, and then I've already done one in Evansville, but they wanted me to come back in October and do another one since the first one went so well. So I'll be doing another one October 13th, I think at 1 o'clock. So if anyone's listening that's in the Evansville area, come down. I'll sign your DVD for you. We also got a 6-foot-tall movie poster cutout, and you can take a picture with us in front of it. I'll be there. I think Levi Atkins, who plays the killer, will be there. I'm going to try to get a couple more of the cast members to show up, too.
That's awesome. I guess my last question is, if you live in a small town, do people come to visit you?
Very weird thing happened to me right before the baby came. Me and my wife were in the baby's room, and I seen a vehicle back into our driveway that had Florida plates, which were in Illinois. And people I knew in Florida, they weren't going to be up here. And I didn't recognize the two guys that got out of the vehicle. And I'm like, well, I guess I better go out there and talk to them. So I went out there, and I said, can I help you? And one guy goes, yeah, you're the guy that made the movie. And I said, yeah. He goes, well, I'd like to buy a copy off you. He goes, I used to live here back in the 50s, and we're just passing through and just want to know if, you know, we can get one. I said, all right. So I went inside and grabbed one of my copies, signed it for him. They took a picture of me on my front porch, and they left. So that was kind of a neat little thing.
That must be one awesome story. Why did you lead with that story?
it was a pretty cool experience to know that someone actually tracked me down to get my autograph. So that was a pretty cool experience.
I would say that's pretty cool. Well, I want to thank you for your time.
No problem.
Hold on. Before you go, tell everybody where to find your film.
Yeah, if you want to check out Unlisted Owner, you can right now you can stream it on Amazon Prime. You can check it out at the Google Play Store. You can also, if you have an Xbox, you can check it out at the Microsoft Store. You can also get it on iTunes, and then it's also available on YouTube, but you have to pay for it. And then if you want the DVD copy, which has 10 minutes of special features on it, you can get that through Amazon as well. You can also get that through FYE, Barnes & Noble. And you can also get it through the Tempe Entertainment Store. And then we are going to, if you want to wait for the Blu-ray, if you're a big Blu-ray collector, we're going to have a Blu-ray coming out sometime later this year. I don't have an exact date yet, but that'll have 20 minutes of special features that are completely different than the ones that are on the DVD, as well as writer-director commentary with myself and co-writer Tyler Landers and Possessed Radio's Stephen Gillespie was the one who kind of was our host for it. So be on the lookout for that. And then also we're going to be doing the DVD signing at the Barnes & Noble in Evansville. And we're going to maybe try to do a couple more Barnes & Nobles, maybe one in St. Louis or somewhere else. We're going to try to maybe do maybe later this year or early next year. Well, so, but if you want to find us on our social media, you can check us out on Facebook at Unlisted Owner, Twitter at Unlisted Owner. I'm also on Instagram at Mr.Jed_Brian, and you can also, if you want to check out the trailer, you can go to our website at unlistedowner.com. So, and we also have t-shirts available if you guys are interested in Unlisted Owner t-shirts. So just message me on my Instagram, or you can message us on Twitter. We have sizes small through extra large. They're $20 plus shipping. So yeah, just let us know.
Wow, you're ready for that question.
I've done it enough.
Well, thank you for your time. You were awesome.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.